If anything, this negative release gives more fuel to the fire that rate cuts are coming soon, potentially very soon.
Welcome to Views from the Desk, a special edition of the BMO ETFs podcast. In these timely episodes, we provide the latest investment news and commentary on the markets, the economy, and investing. Brought to you by BMO Global Asset Management.
The U.S. Federal Reserve made a big announcement, and it's not about interest rates. In today's episode, portfolio managers Matt Montemuro, Chris McCaney, and your host, Erica Toth, explore changes to the Fed's quantitative tightening, or QT, program. They also discuss results from earnings season so far, Canadian GDP numbers, and Japan. Before we hear from the team, please consider subscribing to Views from the Desk on your preferred podcast platform. And for many more ETF insights and resources, visit BMOETFs.com. That's BMOETFs.com.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to episode 223 of our BMO ETF's Weekly Views from the Desk podcast. I'd like to say thank you, first of all, to our listeners for joining us and also for providing us with questions and comments every week. I'm Erica Toth. I'm Director of ETF Distribution for Eastern Canada at BMO Global Asset Management, and I'll be your host for today. And I'm going to be joined by my colleagues, Matt Montemuro and Chris McCaney, both portfolio managers at BMO ETFs. So very data-heavy week to unpack. Matt, let's start off with you. This week was another Fed decision. At this stage, the market always tends to hang on to every word. Maybe you could walk us through, you know, what the decision was and what the potential implications are from here.
Sure. Thanks, Erica. And it definitely was a data-heavy week. Today, the Fed decided to send a message. They sent a clear signal that, you know, they're not happy with recent inflation progress. The continued heating and rising of prices is something that they note and they are not too pleased about. You know, while they acknowledge that if you compare it to last year, there has been a material deceleration of inflation, they did comment that the recent lack of progress was worrisome and something that they continue to have their eye on. Given that the economy still looks strong, employment numbers still look good, you know, this wasn't the worst case scenario. It's not as hawkish as some pundits may have feared. And it does seem like the Fed officials are opting to, you know, try to tweak their message and their plans rather than necessarily like rewrite the message or, you know, change their plans completely. So in addition to holding rates steady, which, you know, kind of was a non-event today, there was little expectation that they would make a move. The committee decided to taper their QT, quantitative tightening program. So beginning this June, the central bank will cap the pace of runoff of Treasury securities at about $25 billion per month. This is going to be down from $60 billion currently. So quite a bit of a reduction here. The move will slow the rate at which the Fed's balance sheet shrinks, thereby diminishing all that extra or additional monetary tightening that was in the system. So, you know, the minutes from the March FOMC meeting did hint at this move. And now that we hear it, you know, the market is digesting as to kind of what type of impact it's going to have on a go-forward basis. You know, what the Fed is trying to avoid, they're trying to take a cautious approach to this balance sheet reduction because they don't want to repeat what happened in 2019 when they reduced the balance sheet too quickly and which led to reserves being drained too low. So it's a happy medium here. They're trying to avoid what happened in 2019, but still reduce that balance sheet size over time. And that's going to be starting this June. So overall, despite the recent run of hotter than expected inflation, so we've got 3 months in counting now of hotter than expected prints, it doesn't seem like the Fed is too concerned or they're not ready to change their course of action, which is a good thing as a whole. You know, today's decision was a little bit quite a bit less than the actual rate decision, as that was kind of a little bit of a non-event and more of a comment on the future of QT program. You know, one other thing to note is that they made several comments about the 2% inflation target. So, you know, that means that likely they're stuck on this 2% inflation target. I think many market participants were wondering, would they revise that target upwards, allowing them to cut potentially sooner? Well, I think today's message was that no, they are firm with that 2% target. That is what they're looking to for the economy to move to on a go forward basis. Looking further, we do continue to see a divergence between Canada and Bank of Canada and the Fed, with, you know, rate cuts getting further pushed out in the US. So right now, if the market is pricing in only one cut for 2024, and that's going to be in December. So, you know, if we rewind, we were pricing in 6 to 7 cuts at the start of the year. Now we're talking about one cut. The Bank of Canada is much more further along. You know, Bank of Canada is looking at 2 to 3 cuts for this year. So we're really starting to see a divergence of expectations between Canada and the U.S. And a lot of people in the market are wondering, will the Bank of Canada be willing to cut rates if the Fed is not doing so? And, you know, I think right now, I think our belief is that we would expect the Bank of Canada to come forward and move on their own fruition. And, you know, the Fed kind of made Powell made a comment just, you know, a few minutes ago that they aren't too concerned about other countries' monetary policy. They feel that, you know, the other countries, you know, Canada as an example, face much weaker economies and that the U.S. economy is continuing to be very strong. So they have the luxury of waiting out and can begin trimming interest rates when it's best suited for them. So, you know, that's something to consider, that, you know, both central banks seem to be okay with some divergence in policy here. You know, the other thing on the horizon, that headwinds that may challenge any further cuts in the U.S., is the U.S. election. That is possibly going to take the entire fall out of the potential interest rate cutting cycle. So just some things to think about. But, you know, today's decision was less about the actual rate decision, more about QT. But we did get a few strong comments from Powell that kind of solidified that it is likely that the Bank of Canada and the Fed will continue to diverge expectations over the next little while.
Thanks for that, Matt.
What's in your vault? Our new physical gold ETFs allow investors to get direct exposure to physical gold bullion without the hassle of buying and storing the precious metal, and at a low cost. To learn more about investing in gold with BMO ETFs, visit BMOETFs.com and search for the tickers ZGLD, ZGLH, and ZGLD.U.
Chris, let's turn over to you right now. We've started to see earnings come in. So I wanted to get your sense of, you know, what are some of the trends that we're seeing with earnings season so far, and what would you highlight for our listeners there?
Yeah, Erica, if we look at earnings and the companies that have announced so far, you know, it's generally been positive, but really more mixed, if anything. You know, we can't say it's been too positive because there have been some misses in terms of stock performance after companies have reported. And even within sectors, we're seeing some divergence. So it's not one particular sector outperforming and others doing worse. You know, if you look within tech and the tech heavyweights, companies like Amazon generally reporting positive earnings, but Microsoft was a bit of a negative earnings result and stock return after those earnings were reported. And companies like Alphabet or Google had generally positive results, but Facebook/Meta had negative. As we record this, companies like Apple and Nvidia have not yet reported. So we'll see what those other tech heavyweights do in terms of their results. But if we look at other sectors as well, companies like Eli Lilly performing very well and having strong earnings results, but Johnson & Johnson within that sector also negative. And, you know, a little bit in the retailer sector, we've seen some negative numbers there as well. So I think really the message it sends to investors is to stay diversified. And of course, ETFs, one of the main benefits of them is that diversified exposure, even in a very concentrated, quote unquote, concentrated top heavy index like the S&P 500, you do get exposure to several names, several stocks across sectors and even within sectors. So, you know, for every Meta that's down 10%, there could be an Alphabet that's up 10%. So, you know, stay diversified, I think, is part of the message that investors should be taking from earnings. Another interesting phenomenon that we've noticed, you know, we trade a lot of options here and we look at the volatility markets very closely as well. And one trend that we've seen is that volatility around earnings has actually picked up. And, you know, this could be stock moves either up or down, so to the positive or to the negative. But over the last couple of years, the trend has been a larger earnings move, a larger stock move after those earnings announcements. And in fact, if we look just at this earnings cycle so far in the S&P 500, over a quarter of the stocks that have reported have had a 6% or greater move the next day. So again, either to the positive or to the negative, you know, more than one in four stocks are moving more than 6%, which is a very high level compared to previous years. If we look, you know, just a few years ago, that number was under 20% of stocks that would move that much. And so we're getting generally more volatility around earnings. And it's not just this earnings season. It has been the last couple of years, a bit of a trend there. And so, you know, options markets tend to start to reflect that. So for option sellers, any strategy that has that embedded call writing or premium income generation tends to benefit from that. So just something to think about when considering those option overlay strategies. But the other thing I wanted to mention is for investors that have that S&P 500 exposure or similar type exposure, but don't want that level of volatility around these earnings cycles, you know, you can look to blend in a little bit of factor exposure such as low volatility. Our BMO US low volatility equity ETF ticker ZLU has very complementary sector exposures to the S&P 500. And so generally one zigs when the other zags. And so if you start to blend these type of strategies together, you get a dampening of that volatility without giving up too much on the growth side of things. Or blend factors together. And one that we like to highlight is that quality factor. So BMO MSCI USA High Quality Index ETF, ticker ZUQ, has that growth element that the S&P 500 also provides, but with a quality tilt to it. So companies that generally have lower debt to equity and more consistent earnings streams, you pair that with that low volatility ETF, and the sector exposures are very complementary in that regard. And you can get the result of a portfolio that could be, you know, similar in overall return potential, but can dampen that volatility, that day-to-day volatility. So again, for investors that are a little bit more risk averse and want to you know, dampen the volatility in their portfolios around these earnings cycles that have generally gotten more volatile over time.
Thanks, Chris. Some good food for thought there, and certainly very timely. So Matt, back to you for a second. You had mentioned earlier, you touched a little bit on the Canadian economy. The Canadian GDP numbers also came out this week. Maybe you could walk us through the release and what that might mean for markets going forward.
Everyone had a close eye on this because, you know, the market is looking at when the Bank of Canada may act next. And I think this is going to be a key indicator that they look at as well. So the Canadian economy's early year strength, you know, that started to tail off, which is in line with many pundits' expectations. You know, with higher rates really starting to hit home in Canada, the data continues to show that we're seeing meaningful slowing of the economy. You know, that persistent higher rates is making its way through the economy faster than we're seeing south of the border. You know, StatsCan says that GDP advanced just 0.2% in February after rising 0.5% in January. You know, that was less than the flash estimate of February of 0.4%, and even more subdued to the kind of consensus projection of 0.3%. So, you know, it came in even lower than both consensus and the flash estimate. Not necessarily surprising. It was still in the same direction, but it was definitely a meaningful drop. You know, the largest contributor to GDP was an uptick in rebound in rail transportation, as this was a big negative impact in January due to the cold start to the year in Western Canada. According to Stats Canada's flash estimate suggests the economy didn't advance at all in March. You know, that leaves us tracking about a 2.2% growth for Q1, which is below the Bank of Canada's forecast of 2.8. So, you know, meaningfully lower than that Bank of Canada forecast, showing, the impact of higher rates is showing up in the data. With momentum slowing towards the end of the quarter, we continue to see the economy advancing just about 1.5% in Q2, which is in line with the central bank's projections. So again, you're seeing those numbers come lower and lower, as you would expect of a prolonged period of 5% interest rates. You know, the slowdown in growth isn't surprising, given January's increase was buoyed by many one-off factors. If anything, this negative release gives more fuel to the fire that rate cuts are coming soon, potentially very soon. Right now, the market's pricing at about a 56% chance, so it's over 50-50 for a June cut. And it seems that momentum of a lot of market experts is that June is becoming more and more likely. So, we were 50-50 June, July. Now it's seeming like the pendulum's kind of inching forward and the market is expecting June. So it will be interesting if the Bank of Canada is willing to act, or if they want to sit on their hands just a little bit longer, kind of waiting for that July. So, we'll know more. We'll see the CPI print come out in a few weeks. That might be the final nail in the coffin if we see a cut in June or not. So if you're looking for the rest of the year and expectations have continued to come down. We're pricing in just two cuts for 2024, which is well below the initial estimates and expectations. The question for me will be, if we do see a cut in June, the narrative has been that we expected that the Bank of Canada would go multiple times because we were pricing in three or four or more cuts for the year. With only two cuts priced in, it'll be interesting to see if they do successive cuts or if they're more patient letting a potential cut, make its way through the system a little bit. So right now, if you look at where things are priced in, you see a cut in June at a 56%, and then the second cut would come around October. So, again, this is a big divergence in initial expectations. It will be interesting to see the path that the Bank of Canada chooses. And although generally we thought that the Fed would have a big impact, it does seem like both the Bank of Canada and the Fed are willing to diverge in expectations here. However, that second cut being pushed out to October, that might be as a result of the Fed's expectations being pushed out to December. So it'll be very interesting to see. I think data is something that the Bank of Canada has zeroed in on as being the main driver of when they're going to come and cut rates. So, this month's data will be very interesting to see, if it gives us any clear sight into June's decision and the potential first cut that we've seen in quite some time.
Thanks, Matt. So we'll keep our eyes open for that next CPI print. And hard to believe, but June is only a month away. So for the BOC, we'll see if the first cut happens then.
Want to reduce the risk of market timing or increase near-term growth? Our new range of BMO structured outcome ETFs can help you dial down risk or dial up equity returns. To learn more, visit BMOETFs.com and search for the tickers ZJAN, ZOCT, ZAPR, ZUEA, or ZEBA.
Let's turn our attention now to international markets. Over to you, Chris. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening with the yen? And I want your thoughts. Is it a good time to consider buying ZJPN, which is our BMO Japan index ETF? Chris?
Sure, Erica. Yeah, interesting times, I think, for the Japanese yen over the last few weeks, and really, a continuation of the trend that started a couple of years ago. We've seen the currency continue to weaken, in particular against the US dollar so far here in 2024. briefly touched 160 per US dollar, which is a 34-year low for the currency. So some extreme moves there. But again, something that a trend that really started in early 2022 when the US Federal Reserve started their interest rate hiking regime, that really kicked off this interest rate differential between the US, other developed countries, and Japan, which stayed in a very, very low interest rate regime while others started increasing those rates. And so it really has been, again, a continuation of this trend, but reached extreme levels. Again, a 160 per US dollar is a 34-year low. And so earlier this week, there were indications that perhaps the Central Bank of Japan stepped in to maybe support the currency a little bit, about $35 billion spent on buying Japanese yen. So 35 billion US dollars equivalent of buying Japanese yen. And so some speculation that the central bank might be intervening there to maybe support the weak currency. They have not indicated it was them, but they have also indicated that they will intervene if they believe they need to. So there could be some of that happening right now or beginning to happen right now. If we take a look at the last time the central bank in Japan did intervene, that was October 2022, the FX rate went from 150 per US dollar all the way down to 130. So a 20 yen move against the dollar. And so significant move there, but very quickly reversed course and went back and continued this sort of multi-year trend that we're talking about. So you could see some yen strength and maybe a little bit of rallying off of this, but the trend, I think, is hard to reverse, even for a central bank that has significant resources like the Bank of Japan does. So if we take a look at the initial question, looking at the equity market, equities have done very well in Japan over the last year or two. And a lot of that is because they are an export-oriented economy. And so a weaker yen actually helps the companies in Japan, broadly speaking, through lower prices for other countries that are importing Japanese goods. So equity markets have actually done well in Japan over the last couple of years. They've done better than US markets that have been the engine of growth over the last few years globally. Of course, whether you were hedged back to the Canadian dollar or not, significantly has impacted your return given the currency move. If we look just at the last year or so, if you were unhedged and had exposure to that weaker yen, your return was probably cut in about half, about a 40% return down to less than 20% for the hedged to CAD versus the unhedged strategy there. So the equity market, in particular in Japan, can have these big swings, whether you're hedged or not. And so, maybe the question is for your Japanese exposure, do you want to hedge that or not? Hard to say that the trend is going to reverse. Again, this has really been an interest rate driven trade. Matt did a good job of outlining what we heard from the Fed today and their moves and that higher for longer narrative that is still there. So I think for investors that expect US rates to start coming down, maybe you can take off some of this hedge. And if you believe that the yen will rally as those interest rates start to compress, that differential starts to compress and Japan starts to catch up a little bit to what US and Canada have been doing. In particular, again, if Canada does start to cut, maybe that looks a little attractive as well. So certainly the option there for investors, I would suggest to maintain the majority of your exposure to stay hedged to CAD. If you're invested in the Japanese market, again, it just removes that currency noise. And when you talk about central bank intervention, it's really hard to predict which way things are going to go from an investment perspective. So again, I would stay largely hedged to CAD. For investors that have enjoyed that move, I wouldn't hold it against you if you wanted to take some of that off and maybe go to a 50-50 position in order to just get exposure to those equities that, again, are really benefiting from a weaker currency. You remain hedged to CAD.
Well, thank you, Chris. And thank you also, Matt, for dialing us onto a lot of great data points to keep our eyes on over the next little while. And I'm looking forward to talking to you both soon. Take care, everyone. Thanks for dialing in.
Thank you to Erica Toth, Matt Montemuro, and Chris McHaney for joining us on the BMO ETFs podcast. Today, we heard about the BMO Low Volatility U.S. Equity ETF, ticker ZLU, which is designed for investors looking for prudent U.S. growth solutions
The team also discussed international markets and, in particular, the weakening Japanese yen. The BMO Japan Index ETF, ticker ZJPN, provides exposure to mid-cap Japanese equities and benefits from local currency appreciation. For more information about the other ETFs discussed in this podcast, check out the episode notes, contact your regional BMO ETF specialist, or visit the ETF Center at BMOETFs.com. That's BMOETFS.com.
Views from the Desk has been brought to you by BMO Global Asset Management.
The viewpoints expressed by the portfolio managers represent their assessment of the markets at the time of publication. Those views are subject to change without notice at any time without any kind of notice. The information contained herein is not and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice to any party. Investments should be evaluated relative to the individual's investment objectives, and professional advice should be obtained with respect to any circumstance. Any statement that necessarily depends on future events may be a forward-looking statement. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. Commissions, management fees, and expenses, if any, all may be associated with investments in exchange-traded funds. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus before investing. Exchange-traded funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. BMO Global Asset Management is a brand name under which BMO Asset Management, Inc. and BMO Investments, Inc. operate.